Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Scott. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Today, we've got a pre-recorded session for everybody. And it's actually a very fun, no pun intended, topic. So we'll talk about that. But as we usually do before that, Michelle, what's been going on or what do you want to talk about before we dive in?
So again, you know, I'm on a roll in terms of personal disclosure, right? So I am going to share with you that it is important to make time in your life for vac obligations. Okay. That's where you go away or you travel to see someone that you really need to see, you know, a family member or a family reunion or some, you know, some kind of family holiday, et cetera, so that you keep those family ties going. That's important. So is a vacation. So there's a vac obligation where you might feel obligated to do something. And then there's a vacation, and a vacation is, I forget what day of the week it is. Where's the umbrella in my drink? You know, usually involves some form of relaxation. And so that my tip of the week is making time for vacation.
So we're in the month of May, and I just want to let everybody know, we here call it a maycation, which means I may come back, I may not.
What does that mean?
Well, you go somewhere on this vacation where you lose track of all time, and it's like, I may come back, I may not.
I may not. So did you have any plans for maycation?
I don't, but I sent my wife away as a gift to her, as a thank you gift.
Oh, that's awesome.
She is away right now on a maycation.
Oh, and she may come back or she may not?
Correct.
Carolyn, come back.
She'll come back. But it's something that she's having fun. So it's very cool.
Good.
Having talked about what you just said, it's very interesting because it kind of ties in with what I was going to mention.
Ooh.
And it's not a vacation as far as going away somewhere, but I've had a number of people that I've been chatting with who are not taking time for themselves.
Oh,
right. And it's like, can you sit with your emotions? Can you sit with what you're going through? Can you do all these things and not identify with what's going on and not identify with the feelings? And it becomes a very interesting, obviously everybody's unique and everybody has their own shit they're going through. And as I work through some of this stuff with these people lately, it all comes down to fear, right? Okay. And the fear that things will stay this way forever.
Oh.
And they don't know how to dig back out from that. So I would like to revisit just very quickly.
Yeah.
A technique that we have talked about before. And it's brilliant. It is from somebody I follow, Tim Ferriss. And he has something called a fear setting exercise. And I really encourage everybody to do a couple of things. Number one, when you're going through, I'm angry, I'm afraid, I'm happy, right? Whatever that is, something that has worked well for me before we get into the fear setting exercise is to say, I notice that I'm afraid, right? Mm-hmm. Now I'm not saying I am afraid. I'm saying I notice that I'm feeling that.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, then we could obviously extend that into the whole loving kindness and the whole Buddhist concept of, okay, well, while I'm feeling afraid, let me just take it in and feel it for everybody. And what I've encouraged folks to do lately is to just sit with this, because those of us who are A-type personalities, we've talked about this on the show before, tend to want to will it away. I'm afraid, so I'm just going to grit my teeth and get through it. Or I'm going to, as I do when I create, I'm going to will it into existence. And the challenge I'm finding with some folks, actually most of the people I work with, is particularly when we talk about happiness, right? Because I'm a big believer in put happy in your life, choose happy.
Choose happy.
The challenge is people know what unhappy is. They do not know what happy is. If I were to ask someone to describe what is happy, it's kind of amorphous. They've got little bits and pieces here. Everyone can sit there and make a list right now of anything that's unhappy. I'm not happy about this. I'm going to complain about that, right? This isn't correct. Everybody knows unhappy. Okay. And so this kind of ties into this fear setting exercise. And what I'm encouraging everybody to do, again, it's what Tim Ferriss, I'm only going to give you part of it because I don't think you need to do all of it. And that is to take one piece of paper, create three columns. So you're going to draw two lines a third of the way through. So you've got three columns.
Okay.
And what Tim suggests is that on the far left, you write define, D-E-F-I-N-E. In the middle, you write prevent. And on the right, you write repair.
Prevent, repair.
Define, prevent, repair. And then he suggests literally going through and doing this once a quarter. For those of you who are having more serious challenges right now, do it now and do it often. And on the far left, at the very least, fill out the far left, and that is brain dump all your nightmares.
Okay. So far left is define.
Define the worst case scenario. What is it you're afraid of?
Okay.
You know, for my performer entertainer client, that usually comes down to I'll get sick and can't make the performance, or I'll be ridiculed and the audience won't like it, or I'll never be booked again, or right? For others, it's a financial situation. And I can tell you again, for most of my A-type really successful people, one of their biggest fears is being homeless. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
The richer you are, wealth-wise, money-wise, the more you have to lose. And so one of their biggest underlying fears is just being homeless and not being able to take care of themselves. So if you can't do that, just write down what could go wrong. And you brain dump it.
Yeah.
Then in column two, in the prevent column, you're going to write down ways that you could right now be proactive to reduce the likelihood that any of these nightmares will happen.
Okay.
And then finally, in the repair column, it's okay, the shit has hit the fan. How do you fix it? How do you repair it at that point? And here's the beauty of doing this. Every one of us has been through hell and come back out again. Some of you might be in the midst of it right now, and you don't know, you don't see the other side of it yet. And yet there have been experiences in your past where you've been through a broken heart, the loss, the death, the financial issues, and you've come out of it at some point. Every one of us has successes.
Yeah, we have successes.
And so you have at least that to rely on that says, I can handle this. I won't like it, but I can handle it. And so column three becomes the repair section. And it's a real nice way, at least my clients have found, to remind themselves, I got this.
I like that.
Because, what I'm noticing all of a sudden is that this theme is happening where people are going dark and twisty, but they're not coming back out of the dark and twisty. What they're doing is trying to fight against it rather than surrender to it. And by the way, when I use the term surrender, everybody, I'm not talking about raising a white flag and being a victim. I'm the last person you're going to hear talk in those terms. But I met with somebody today. I was mentioning the term surrender. They love to sleep. They're really good at sleeping. But they did not understand the term surrender. And I mentioned to them that when you go to sleep, you surrender
to sleep.
That doesn't mean you're giving up. It doesn't mean you're failing. It's here's the situation.
Here's the thing.
I'm going to surrender into that. And I really invite everybody to understand that surrender. Well, we've gotten into this before, right? With the 12 steps and all the rest of that. Because I'm not I'm not a big fan of the Serenity Prayer. And the difference, right? So it has taken me a long time to understand the difference between surrender and failure. And so I can't, if we change the Serenity Prayer and we put surrender into it, and a few other words, I could actually get behind it. And so for those of you listening, if you think about this as just falling into a big fluffy bed and going to sleep, what does that feel like? And even in the darkest hours, if you surrender to the situation, it is what it is, right? Whether you created it or you feel that it's happening to you, hint, hint, most of the time you created it, right? You can take the whole Ho'oponopono approach, right? I own this. I created this. Whatever happens to me is of my own design at some level, depending on your spiritual or religious beliefs. Completely irrelevant, right? At this point, it becomes, I'm going to surrender to it is what it is. Now, how do I how do I prevent it or repair it? And it might be a nice way for you not to drop deeper into the dark and twisty well of fighting against something that the more you, it's like quicksand, right? A lot of times, the more you struggle, the more you sink. The way you get out of quicksand is to float.
That's counterintuitive.
It's very counterintuitive. And so it's just a nice reminder. We've talked about this on the show before. I wanted to remind people of it because it seems to be a theme that has come up with clients.
All right. So
just
float. Float with it. Float with stress.
Well, so this is an interesting thing you just brought up that that kind of will lead us in.
Quicksand is not exactly relaxing, right? It's not a soft, pillowy bed, but you do need to surrender and float to survive it. So
You have, if you struggle against quicksand, you'll sink.
And I mean, I'm just working this out live right now. This is not pre-planned, but if you struggle against stress, you probably sink too.
Yeah. So what happens with quicksand? I've never been in it. I've read about it though. Right. We've all seen,
but I've been in water.
We've all seen Princess Bride. We've all seen her, you know, the princess drop down into the quicksand and then farm boy has to jump in. So like
most of us have been in water. Yeah.
So in quicksand, again, I want to use quicksand because it's a crisis. I want to use quicksand because it's a stress situation. And I want to use quicksand because it's an immediacy. Right? You've got all the makings of a crisis with quicksand.
Yeah.
The more you struggle, the more you sink. If you lean back into the floaty stuff, it brings your feet up. And you float. It is much like being in a pool. Although in a pool, you don't, the more you struggle, you don't drown necessarily.
True-ish, but like people who are drowning, right? What do you need them to do? You sometimes, you know, when lifeguard school, they teach them to knock them out so they can get them to float and drag them one arm, you know, to shore because they need their feet up. Like they're struggling in water, so they're kind of vertical and flapping their arms and flapping their legs and they're sinking, like as if they're trying to stand up in water, but there's no bottom, right? So that would be the same as quicksand. And yet to get rescued, you have to lay flat with your feet up and float while someone else tows you into rescue. So that is similar.
You stop struggling.
You stop struggling.
Right. So again, it's one of those things where what if, you know, there's another thing apparently you do with quicksand, and that is when you find yourself in it, you attempt to step backwards. So there's the backwards, and then there's the leaning into it to create that bigger footprint for your body so you float. And as someone who fights mightily against things that are suboptimal, it's a constant reminder for me, what if you lean into this? What if you float a little bit?
Mm-hmm. What if you float with stress? What if you float with your to-do list? What if you float with your deadlines?
Right.
What if instead of struggle, you relax into?
What if you float with your fear? And because it really all comes down to that, right? Most of us are in distress because we're afraid.
Right.
Most of us are suffering because we become attached to an outcome that we don't have and don't see that we're getting it. And so wouldn't it be interesting for listeners to simply say, I noticed that, lean into it. And, you know, I talk a lot about being fearless. That is not the fearless is not the absence of fear.
What is it?
Fearless is just that. It's less fear.
Oh, it's less fear.
it's not the elimination of it.
It's not fear elimination.
And I've got to tell you, it's much like we've talked about grief. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it ever goes away. You learn to walk with it.
You learn to walk with it for sure. Yeah, that's my experience professionally and personally. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm on board with this experiment.
So that kind of brings us into, I think, a nice segue for today's discussion of laughter as therapy. And, you know, one of the ways that I lean into fear or lean into stress, right? I'm not wishing the stress and the fear away.
Okay.
What I'm doing is something that I liken to a hypnotic situation where you do a pattern interrupt, right? They've got this whole thing going on. You bypass the critical faculty, and then you do what's called a pattern interrupt. You switch up the ordinary and it gets your attention. And I think one of the best ways of doing that is humor and laughter.
Mm.
It's a pattern interrupt, and it's a nice way of not ignoring, not deflecting, but literally bypassing the fear, the distress, the depression, the anxiety that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how you use humor, but we've all heard the old biblical phrase, laughter is the best medicine, right?
I use laughter in therapy all the time. Well, not 100% of the time, but frequently.
Yeah. And by the way, I do want to distinguish, because I've got a number of friends who are in the comedy field. And I've certainly been around some people who are phenomenal comedians, or were phenomenal comedians, and their entire life was actually marked by depression.
Yeah.
So I want to distinguish a comedian from what we're talking about today.
Okay.
Right.
What's the difference?
Again, it's, you know, a number of very famous entertainers suffer from a lifelong, they've been saddled for a lifetime with anxiety and a lifetime of depression. Mm-hmm. And it's clinical, right? Sometimes they're on medication, sometimes they're not. I'm not talking about that today. What I'm talking about is the life happens. The stuff hits the fan periodically. When that happens, how can we use laughter and good humor to snap us out of that? If you've got a deeper clinical situation, then you need help and potentially medication. But that's not for me to prescribe, because I'm not that kind of person.
Right. So we're distinguishing between being a comedian and using laughter to help you cope.
Yeah. So I'm not suggesting that anybody go out and suddenly start taking stand-up comedy classes and perform. If you want to, cool. I'm simply suggesting, you know, one of the things that we'll talk about, I'm sure, is what do you and I do to bring laughter into our lives? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love watching a variety of different shows and different movies and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I outright belly laugh when I watch these. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll get into them. I mean, there's a good example of, I'm not a comedian.
Right, but you're using laughter.
But I'm using laughter to snap me out of or keep fueled a scenario that I want.
Right. So before we get into how to bring laughter, let's talk about why it's important, shall we?
Sure.
Like, so here's a reference for those of you that like reading, you know, check out the mayoclinic.org and the benefits of laughter.
Yep.
And you'll hear very similar information to what I've been studying for decades, which is that there are both short and long-term benefits for laughter. That number one, the short-term benefits are that it stimulates a lot of your internal organs by intaking more air. When you laugh, you're pulling in more oxygen-rich air, which helps your heart and your lungs and your muscles. And that increases the endorphins in your brain. So the epinephrine and dopamine and serotonin that are the happy neurochemicals, it helps release those in your brain. It also activates your stress relief response. So we have a fight or flight stress response, and laughter causes the relaxation response to kick in and interrupts that fear, flight, stress response. Okay. It also, because of its stimulation to circulation and muscle relaxation, it helps reduce the physical symptoms of stress. So muscle tension, right? That you're stressed, or shortness of breath. So it helps soothe your muscle tension. But then long-term effects, there's actually some research about improving your immune system. When you have more laughter in your life, you have less negative thoughts. Negative thoughts are connected to the negative chemicals in your body, whereas laughter, by contrast, actually creates more of those neuropeptides that help fight stress and potentially more serious illness. So it has a direct impact on your immune system. Again, you know, it can relieve pain. It produces its own natural painkiller. And it also increases your personal satisfaction. So it makes it easier to cope with difficult situations. I know for me, I like to use laughter when I'm going through difficult situations. If I can find something funny, it helps. And it improves your mood. So it improves, it helps like with chronic illness, with chronic depression, stress, anxiety. It can improve your self-esteem and it can improve your mood. So laughter really does have a lot of good medicinal relief connected to it.
Yeah. And I'm going to add one thing. I mean, I've looked at the Mayo Clinic site and some of the others as well. And it still seems to me, as a non-clinician, it still seems to me, at least in not only my own personal experience, but those of the clients I work with, that we still are working with behaviors and habits. And when you get that dark and twisty situation, right, that the stress situation of fight, flight, faint, we have habits, we have performances, we have behaviors that we repeat because it has saved us in the past. Mm-hmm. And this is why I call it a pattern interrupt, because what we're doing is we're using humor to shock our system out of that performance and that behavior and that habit into something new. And you catch yourself, right? You're having this wonderful belly laugh with all of these wonderful benefits that the Mayo Clinic has identified. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful way to catch yourself. It's like, oh my God, I actually feel better.
Yes. Now, you may say, well, I don't have anything to laugh about. Okay, laughing yoga. Write this down. Laughing yoga.
Yeah.
Go and Google search laughing yoga on YouTube and watch a video and do the exercises.
Oh, hell, just watch people do goat yoga.
Funny cat videos, funny dog videos. I don't care. But laughing yoga is a great science brought over where you fake laugh until you start to real laugh. You can hire a laughing yoga instructor. You can have a laughing yoga party, or you can just watch a laughing yoga video and do them. It's like, if you can think about fake guffaw laughing, and sooner or later, when you fake the laugh, it turns into real laughter. Makes you hot, works out your stomach muscles. It's good exercise, good oxygen.
Well, you know, and I'm going to add to that because it was interesting. I just had this conversation with an entertainer this morning, and we were working through some things, and I reminded them of the show. My mind just went blank. It's the show about the dancer with Robert Fosse. Oh my goodness, I can't think of
Fosse.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the show. It's a movie, and I believe it's Schneider is the actor. But it doesn't matter, because what you see is the performer. All these things going on. We won't get into what is going on, but he constantly, right before the show, looks at himself in the mirror, puts his fingers up like you would for a camera. So the directors always, they create these little L's with their forefinger and thumb. And he looks in the mirror and he goes, showtime.
Showtime.
And then I'm going to remind people, I've talked about this show on Netflix before. It's called Unstable. It's with Rob Lowe. And the whole thing, I mean, is it a great show? No, but it caught my attention because the opening of the show is this dark and twisty individual who's lost his wife and trying to cope, and is a billionaire and trying to cope. And he looks miserable. His hair is disheveled and he's not doing anything. And then you see him look in the mirror with this downtrodden, somebody died, which they did. Somebody died look.
Sadness, about to cry.
And then he says, nope, we're not doing that today.
Nope, not doing that today.
We're doing this. And then he smiles.
And then he fake smiles.
Yeah. you know, so there's that part of it. The other thing I want to point out, and I think this is true, at least for me, with the people that I work with and that I look up to and the stuff that I use, I think we forget that how powerful our choices and our intention setting is. And, you know, I've always loved the concept. What if you set the intention to laugh more? What if it's just that?
Yep.
Right, we talk about laughing, we talk about smiling. It for me, it goes back to setting the intention. Because of all the benefits, right?
Yep.
And you know, I point that out because if you set that intention, then you can move into this morning routine of looking yourself in the mirror and smiling. Right? We're not doing the other stuff today, we're doing this. Showtime.
Showtime. That's why I want to encourage you all to learn a good few laughing yoga techniques, because when we sit around passively waiting for a show or a comedian to make us laugh because you're feeling crappy or stressed out, again, you're turning your power and your control over to someone else. So why not learn how to belly laugh at, like, when you need it, you just start guffawing, or you start, oh, you know, practice your different laughs. The Santa Claus laugh, ha, 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 ha. The machine gun laugh. Practice the different
laughs. Please don't do that one.
Someone told me I have like a joke. What is his name? Jack Nicholson Joker laugh from time
to time. Oh, that's scary.
I had no idea that I have this laugh in me, but apparently I have a Jack Nicholson Joker laugh. I don't know what it is. I can't even do it for you. But practice your different laughs, and eventually you start to feel silly and you'll start to laugh rather than, oh, turn on that comedy show and you don't know whether it's going to make you laugh or not. I mean, it's great to watch comedies and romantic comedies and different things like that, but they don't always elicit laughter. I watched a romantic comedy last night. It ended up, I was in tears calling my partner because I'm traveling. Oh,
tell me about it.
I love you. You mean so much to me. I mean, I was like a crying fool watching a comedy.
So I don't know about other people. I you know, this is a good time to maybe talk about actual things you and I use.
Yes.
To bring laughter into our lives and humor and just that
great idea.
Better feeling. And I got to tell you, I noticed in getting ready for today's show that I find it easier to find humor when I respect the person delivering it.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, Robin Williams, for example, the man, despite all his demons, is a freaking creative genius.
Genius.
And
miss you, Robin.
And you know, I've talked before, we won't dwell on it, but I was very blessed to be able to spend some time with him and Pam Dauber on the set of Mork and Mindy, and to watch him work and improvise was, you guys think he's a genius? You ought to see him work through this in the rehearsal process. And just a wonderful, effusive, over the top, loving man, right? Despite the demons. And again, I don't want everybody to be a comedian, but I respected his genius. And so to watch him talk about golf in Scotland, for example, just thinking about it, it's like he puts on the accent, he does that. Groucho Marx, the man is there's another one, a freaking genius. Now I know the Marx Brothers is not everybody's cup of tea. So for example, I can watch the Marx Brothers and I will belly laugh every time. It's the same joke every time. I can watch, Groucho's talk show where he has some guy on and he says, well, how many children do you have? And the guy's, I think it was 7 children. And as I remember the show, Groucho said, so what do you attribute that to? And the man says, well, I love my wife dearly. And Groucho takes his cigar and says, I love my cigar dearly, but I take it out every now and then. Right. Every time I can do that. Jonathan Winters, another one of the heroes for Robin Williams, by the way. Again, another wonderful, loving, but demon filled human being who's just a genius in what he did. And then modern day, I absolutely love, whose line is it anyway? I've got hours and hours and hours of these, you know, half hour shows that it's like a little, you know, take 2 aspirin and call me in the morning. Hell, I'm going to go watch Wayne Brady and some of these other comedic geniuses do their thing. That said, I can't watch the Three Stooges.
Oh, really? You're not a Three Stooge fan?
Nope. And I can't do, sometimes I can do Laurel and Hardy, cannot do Laurel and Hardy for the most part. I need a different kind of humor. So everybody is different. And don't think that, you know, my sense of humor, which by the way, can be very childish. I think a lot of guys can associate with that, right? Many of us are just teenagers again.
Yeah.
It's that kind of stupid ass humor.
It's true. I love Key and Peele. Oh my gosh, they're so hysterical. I mean, it's not on anymore, but their reruns are amazing. And some of the sketches, like, who is it? He does this substitute teacher bit. And and is trying to incorporate kids' names. And he's like, instead of Aaron, which is spelled with two A's often, he calls it Aaron.
That's what rappers do now.
And then he's punishing the kids for saying their names the correct way, thinking that they're trying to pull one over on him. And there's another one where he's waiting in line to, and we've all experienced this, you're waiting in line to board the plane. And it seems like there's, you think you're in the first loading zone and there's like 50,000 people that get to go before group one. And so it's a ploy on how many groups go before group one. Anyway.
I'm listening to that, and it's very, again, one of my favorite things to go to, my comedic go-to things is Monty Python.
Oh yeah, they're classic.
Right? Now, I got to tell you, my wife, I have to turn off Monty Python. She will not be in the same room with it.
She doesn't like it, huh? Okay.
But she doesn't like that silly slapstick humor, which is very interesting for me because I don't like the Three Stooges.
Okay.
Which is very, very, it's a very similar physical type comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just respect these people out of Monty Python like you wouldn't believe. So again, very interesting for each one of you listening. You're going to have your own parameters.
Your own version of humor.
Right. I've watched, as you have said, Michelle, I very rarely watch a comedian. Right.
Oh, do you?
Okay. There are some stand-up shows. I have one friend who went out and did a comedy show down in San Diego. I know he listens to the podcast, and he sent me the YouTube video. Now, he's never done this particular show more publicly. It was just kind of like a private, a couple gigs down in San Diego. And he sent me the video. I was in freaking hysterics.
Oh,
it was so dirty.
Uh-oh.
And it was so filthy, and it was so freaking
funny,
reverent. I could not stop laughing.
Right.
So it's you have to find your own stuff. I love
you have
irreverence.
To find your own stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to find. Are you slapstick? Are you witty humor? Do you like dark humor? Do you like bizarre humor? But again, the point is, are you actually? I would say the point is, are you laughing out loud?
Yeah.
Because if you want the medical scientific benefits of laughter, it's not just in your head thinking something's funny. It is the physical act of laughing, which whether you're fake laughing until you laugh or someone makes you physically laugh, that is where you're going to get the benefits of laughter. Joy, I would equate like joy or enjoyment from the type of funniness that is in your head, right? Like someone entertains you and you're not laughing out loud. And it's still nice to have joy or enjoyment in your head, but the medical benefits come from laughter, actual laughter. And sometimes even in your own life, tragedy plus time equals comedy. So
absolutely.
You can think about the maybe dumb, ridiculous, harebrained things you've done, or the times you've slipped or falled or made a bad decision. And retroactively, you can get a lot of laughter out of telling that story. I'm laughing about my nearly illegal crossing of the Canadian-American border, which went fine. And it was all fine. It was very legal. Don't come after me because it was all legal. But it was quite the commotion, let me tell you, on this latest road trip, because I forgot my passport.
Oh, now you sound like my wife. When we were traveling in the UK, I was doing a seminar. So I was doing my gig, and she decided to go off with one of our daughters and sightsee.
Yes.
And went to the Globe Theater.
Oh.
It was closed.
And?
There was a door that was open.
And
you know my wife.
Yes.
They went in.
Oh Lord.
And decided to have their own personal individual look around
tour
at Shakespeare's Globe Theater.
Oh my.
Until an international incident occurred where security found them, and they're Americans. And it all worked out well. They talked themselves out of it, but it's like The door was open.
Yes. Oh my.
We got a great laugh about it after the fact. After the fact. And so I want to underscore here too. I don't think either one of us, I know I'm certainly not, suggesting that in the midst of chaos, calamity, death, grief, that you mentioned the Joker, that you don't do the "why so serious" concept.
Yeah.
That give yourself that sacred space to be with your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Understand there's also the back end of it. There's walking out of the fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There is. I remember, so speaking of that, I remember when my dad died that it was hard to find much recorded entertainment. Sure. That didn't talk about death, grief, dead people, you know, dead dads. I mean, it was just an ongoing incident. So having friends, here's a trick for those of you who are grieving. Have a friend curate for you something. So have a friend preview it, whether it's a stand-up comedy thing on Netflix or whatever, Hulu or whatever, or just Spotify. Have a friend or a movie, have them preview the content with the eye of, does anybody die? Is anybody grieving in here?
Okay, let me curate for everybody right now.
Yeah.
From personal experience, when you're going through hell,
yeah,
don't watch Grey's Anatomy.
No.
It's great. It's a great show. Not in the midst of that, because it will trigger everything.
Everything. Yes. There are just shows like that. So curate. Have a friend curate for you funny stuff. Okay. It makes a big difference. Because you need a break. Even people who are grieving or in the midst of like someone dying or even your own facing your own death, you need a reprieve, but you don't need to watch a show about someone dying from cancer. You know, like that's not, you need a break.
Yeah. And again, you know, one of the things, it may just be me, but I'm not a big fan of many modern comedians. It's a different kind of comedy today. Mm-hmm. You know, I still go back to people like George Carlin,
mm-hmm.
right? It's that very intellectual, but filthy humor.
Mm-hmm.
Find what works for you.
Yes.
And in the midst of trying to come out, that's not the time to experiment. Take some time ahead of time.
Yeah.
To find, hey, I like this, I like that. And then you've got your little bottle of comedy that you can take.
Yeah. Agreed. I had a friend curate, just so you know, it's a recommendation. I had a friend curate for me during Dad's death again, and they introduced me to Kathleen Madigan, who is on Spotify, who has a release on Netflix right now that I just watched. It's great. And she also has a whole thing called Bothering Jesus. Okay, I don't think there's one episode in there. Lot of humorance and, you know, her upbringing, being brought up by a lawyer as a kid and stuff like that. Catholic humor, as they would say.
Yeah. So
but you don't have to be Catholic to listen to it. My Jewish friend recommended her to me.
So we're starting to wind up here, but I've got to tell you, I have over the last couple of years discovered a comedian / entertainer. And I have never laughed so hard, even at the Marx Brothers. So I'm going to share this with everybody. She is out of the UK, and her name is Nina Conti.
Yes.
N-I-N-A-C-O-N-T-I, Nina Conti. She's a ventriloquist.
Yes.
But the ventriloquism is one thing.
Yes.
Her and Monkey are a whole nother thing. And I don't want to ruin it for everybody. You just go look up Nina Conti, and then go look up Nina Conti and Monkey in therapy.
Agreed.
And it's like, this is belly laugh out loud. And I don't care whether you like stupid humor, intellectual humor. I think that there's something here for everybody. She can be raunchy. She can be sophisticated. when she puts these masks on the audience members, for example, and she turns audience members into ventriloquist puppets, it's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant stuff.
Agreed. That should be our recommendation of the day.
All right. I think we're at the end of our show here.
Me too.
I want to thank everybody for joining us on this recorded podcast. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe on your favorite platforms. I want to thank everybody also. It seems we're growing on the Apple podcast platform as well. We talked about Spotify. And next week, we are going to be talking about the role of therapy in managing stress, something right up Michelle's alley. So I'll be listening to her. Anything you want to close with, Michelle, or are we good with that?
I'm going to close with you can also ask Siri to tell you a joke if you're bored and you're on a long road trip and you need to stay awake. You just say, Siri, tell me a joke, or if you have the Alexa. But here's one from Siri. Scott, did you see the guy wearing camouflage?
No.
Neither did I.
All right, we're going to end on that one. I guess I don't respect Siri enough, so.
It was very stupid.
All right. On that, again, thank you, everybody. And we will see you live next week.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.